This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Pope Francis comes to Washington for the start of a historic U.S. visit. A former U.S. Secretary of State has something to say about the Europe migrant crisis. A rare supermoon eclipse is coming.
So we'll go from being very bright to turning this beautiful red color, the effect of the sunrises and sunsets of the Earth being projected onto the lunar surface.
And nothing like that eerie music with it. And a Jonas Brother turns out another song with some big hopes. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Pope Francis is here in Washington for the start of his historic six-day visit to the United States. The Pope arrived Tuesday afternoon at Andrews Air Force Base just outside Washington, where he was met by President Obama, First Lady Michelle Obama, and their two daughters. A motorcade whisked Pope Francis past cheering crowds to the Vatican's diplomatic mission in northwest Washington. VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski spoke with International Edition Sarah Williams about the Pope's busy schedule ahead.
He'll go to the White House. He will canonize a saint, a Spanish missionary, who established missions out in California. He'll do that here in Washington. And he will address Congress as well in Washington. And then he goes on, of course, there's much more in this trip in New York and Philadelphia as well.
Yes, and actually after he leaves D.C., is he then in New York City?
Then he goes to New York City. The main event there is his address at the U.N. General Assembly, and it seems President Obama will be there as well. He'll be at Madison Square Garden and make a trip across Central Park. The biggest part of the trip, though, I mean, you might already be out of breath by hearing all of this, but will be his appearance in Philadelphia in the weekend. He won't meet superpower leaders there, but the three biggest events of this trip will be in Philadelphia. He'll have a huge mass in the middle of the city. He'll speak at Independence Hall, and he will also make an appearance at a big world meeting of families that's expecting around 1 million people.
And this, I believe, is his first visit to the United States.
This is his first visit to the United States as Pope and also as a person. He's never come here before. And he has, I think there is some significance to that, that he doesn't see, or at least until now, he hasn't seen the U.S. as really being the center of the world. To him, the important parts of the world are the peripheries, people in poorer countries, people who are normally neglected. And that's been the emphasis of this papacy so far.
The Pope's appearances are expected to include critiques of the dominance of finance and technology, a condemnation of world powers, of the conflicts gripping the planet, appeals to protect and welcome immigrants, and climate change. Pope Francis came to the U.S. following a four-day trip to Cuba. Almost one-third of American Catholics are Hispanic. According to a new Pew Research Center study, Hispanics are also leaving the faith at a high rate. In 2010, 67% of Hispanic Americans identified as Catholic, but in 2013, that figure dropped to 55%. Daniela Schreier visited a predominantly Hispanic church that is following the Pope's method for keeping the faithful committed to their religion.
Even on a weekday afternoon, the midday Spanish language mass at St. Elizabeth Church brings the faithful. More than half of all Hispanic Americans identify as Catholic. Many of this church's parishioners are new immigrants from predominantly Catholic countries in Latin America. Nearly 90% of Hispanic Americans have a favorable opinion of Pope Francis, who will be visiting the city late this month. Sister Celia Cid says the Pope, who is a son of immigrants, understands their needs.
He's a son of immigrants, so he identifies with the struggles of many different nationalities, different countries, and what they are going through. There is a great hope for me, for him to come, because this is like a melting pot. This is a city built on the immigrants.
But nearly a quarter of Hispanic Americans are now former Catholics. Some leave for evangelical and Pentecostal churches, while others simply drift away from the Catholic Church. Father Ambiorix Rodriguez, an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, was raised in the Manhattan community where he now preaches. He says Pope Francis has a solution. The pontiff has advised his spiritual leaders to go out and connect beyond the confines of the church building.
We can no longer stay inside, self-enclosed, just worrying about, you know, who we have, who's here. But no, the church needs to go out.
The departure of many Hispanics from the church is most pronounced among the young. Today, many under the age of 30 classify themselves as unaffiliated. But the Pope's openness invigorates young parishioner Elias.
If the Catholics that have drifted away were based on, you don't understand me, or it's too complicated, or I'm tired of the old traditional habits, well, the Pope is actually saying, you know what, I am moving forward.
Elias said the Pope's use of social media to connect with the next generation is one way he is keeping young people invested and interested.
The youth are the future of tomorrow. They're the ones that are going to keep this church alive, and they're keeping the church alive. So that's where it starts, to be honest. It's the youth, because if the youth are not being influenced or not being moved by it, you're going to lose a lot of members.
Daniela Schreier, VOA News, New York.
An estimated 1.5 million people will attend masses led by Pope Francis during his visit to Washington and Philadelphia. At the end of the mass, worshipers receive communion wafers. At a monastery in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, a group of nuns is working overtime to provide enough of a supply. VOA's George Putich has more.
Even though the ingredients are just flour and water, it took around 2 months of working overtime to mix, bake, and pack 100,000 wafers ordered from the Monastery of St. Clair. The rest will be provided by other suppliers. Sister Anne Bartle says it takes about 2 minutes to turn the batter into a giant waffle.
It comes off, we cut the bread in half so that it fits into the humidity cabinet, which dampens the bread. And then after the bread is damp enough, it's cut on our machines, 35 hosts at a time.
Baking the communion wafers for Roman Catholic churches in the United States and Canada provides income for the Monastery of St. Clair. But Sister Bartle says that is not all.
It's also a very special work because it's making the breads that will become the body of Christ once they're consecrated by the priest.
The monastery is cloistered, so only 8 nuns will attend the Pope's Mass. The rest will spend the day praying or baking more wafers. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Time now to check out what people are saying about the Pope's visit to the U.S. on the Internet. Social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is here with details on what's being said. G?
Hello, Ray. Pope Francis, or Papa Frank as I like to call him, finally made it to D.C. and the excitement here is almost palpable. He arrived in Maryland around 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Tuesday and got to D.C. about an hour later. Ray, I'm sure it wasn't fun for you to drive into the district from the burbs, right?
Well, it wasn't. I got hit with some traffic. I took a back way, but so did everybody else, and we had to come to a dead stop because the motorcade was traveling on a freeway underneath us. So we were at a dead stop for around 20 minutes, but I still got to work on time.
That's nice.
So what's a Twitter handle we can follow to keep updated on the Pope's visit?
Well, for listeners in the surrounding area, the Washington Post tweeted a map that showed how to get around D.C. during the papal visit. Now for those outside the area, I'll say the White House account. I know it's not the most intuitive answer here, but if you follow at White House on Twitter, you can watch a video clip of the Pope's arrival. And here's what the account tweeted along with a clip. Watch Pope Francis meet with the President, the First Lady, the Vice President, and his wife as he touches down in America. Hashtag Pope in D.C. Instead of spelling out the dignitaries, the account used their handles, which are at Pontifex, at POTUS, at FLOTUS, at VP, and at Dr. Biden.
Whoa, well, there's certainly a handful of handles there. I don't know if I can keep up with that, but how often was the hashtag Pope in D.C. used?
Quite a lot. More than 40,000 tweets used that hashtag in the last 24 hours, according to the Topsy Analytics website. That's a lot considering he just got here. And what's really cool about it is that whenever you use the hashtag, Twitter generates an image of the capital in your tweet.
And gee, what about the media reaction going on right now?
The news outlets are having a field day with this, but let me just introduce one. The digital media website Mashable tweeted about the Popemobile. Mashable sent out a tongue-in-cheek tweet that reads like this. The Pope heads off, chasing the American dream in a Fiat. Hashtag Pope in D.C. I guess Mashable is fascinated with the Vatican's choice of the vehicle because it sent out multiple tweets about it. Another one reads like this. Pope's holy ride is cute Fiat 500L. Hashtag blessed. Now, as you know, Popemobile is just an informal name for the car a Pope uses during outdoor public appearances like this one. Pope Francis is known for his humble way of life, and his Popemobiles are always the smaller cars, right?
Thank you very much, G. You can follow her on Twitter at G Abby Lee. That's spelled JEEABBEYLEE. And this is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
You are listening to VOA's International Edition. According to the U.S. State Department, more than half of Syria's population, about 12 million people, is in need of humanitarian assistance. The United States announced earlier this week it will provide $419 million in additional humanitarian aid to help those affected by the conflict in Syria. With this new funding, the total since the start of the crisis is now more than $4.5 billion. The Syrian crisis grows increasingly dire every day, and Russia is increasing its military assistance to Syrian President Bashar Assad. The U.S. Institute of Peace met in Washington to examine what is beyond the refugee crisis. One of the major speakers was former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. VOA senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke with International Edition's Jim Stevenson about what she had to say.
Albright reminded the audience that she and her family sailed to the United States as refugees from Czechoslovakia and urged a more generous response from the United States.
And when it comes to global crises today, I fear that too many in the United States believe we can insulate ourselves from the world's problems and leave it to the countries of the region and Europe to sort out. The idea that we can stand aside or wait for others to act is an illusion, mocked by the lessons of history.
Albright noted that the Syrian war, now in its fifth year, has claimed the lives of almost 250,000 people, displaced more than 7 million within Syria, and has created almost 5 million refugees, most of whom have dispersed across Syria's neighborhood, and some of whom are now streaming into Europe.
But even with more generous assistance to the fleeing Syrian refugees, the suffering of the Syrian people will continue to rise unless the killing stops.
That's exactly what Albright stressed, Jim, and said that the United States should pressure Russia in the upcoming talks, whether diplomatically or militarily, to convince their ally in Damascus to stop targeting his own people.
If the Russians really do think that they have some influence on Assad, they can be a part of this and say,
We can discuss whether you're in the government or not, but we cannot discuss it if you are dropping barrel bombs. And they should use their influence that way. If the Russians wish to be seen as a normal country, I think it would be useful if they said something that made clear that barrel bombs are not the way to deal with civilians.
Albright also stressed that at the heart of the matter lies the international community's failure to find a way to end the catastrophic violence in Syria. And there was another panelist, Stephen Hadley, a former U.S. National Security Advisor, and he has this opinion. He said, the absence of political engagement is not just making it worse, but is actually unattainable. So all panelists agreed that ending the war in Syria is key to finding a solution to that migrant crisis in Europe.
Senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. The UN envoy, meanwhile, on Syria launched another effort Tuesday to open peace talks on Syria. Stefan de Mistura announced the plan calls for Syrian parties to participate in discussions within four working groups looking at political and legal issues, military matters, and counterterrorism. Global markets dropped Tuesday. Business correspondent Alexis Christophorus is in New York and tells us what's behind that big sell-off.
U.S. stocks joined a worldwide decline in equities as a sell-off in commodities resumed. We also saw auto stocks take a tumble. That's amid a widening Volkswagen emissions scandal. There is some speculation it may lead to tougher regulations for the entire industry. Shares of Volkswagen tumbled 20% after sinking 19% on Monday. The manufacturer has set aside about $7 billion to cover fallout from a scandal affecting 11 million cars. Analysts say it's a combination of confusion after last week's Fed meeting, a renewed drop in commodities, and continued fear about China. They say the U.S. market still needs to find a bottom, and we're not sure it has done that just yet. The dollar reached its strongest level in almost 2 weeks against the euro, and commodities prices suffering once again. Industrial metals fell amid renewed concern over slowing economic expansion in China, and the yen climbed on increased demand for safe haven assets. We saw Brazil's real sink to a record low to lead emerging market assets lower. And we also saw more commodity-producing nations get hit regarding their currencies, including South Africa's rand, New Zealand's dollar, and, like I mentioned, Brazil's real.
Economic concerns are also being addressed by China's visiting President Xi Jinping, who started a week-long visit to the United States Tuesday in the northwest city of Seattle, Washington. He will also visit with President Obama in Washington.
Many are saying that President Xi's visit here is really to try to calm fears about the slowing Chinese economy and to hopefully find some common ground between the two countries when it comes to these cyber attacks. We know China has been denying these hackings, but President Obama has come out quite strongly saying that the U.S. is ready to impose sanctions against both Chinese businesses and individuals if these attacks do not stop. So there is no great hope that real agreements will come out of this summit, but they believe that there will be a little more showboating as opposed to actual agreements being signed or, you know, them coming to some sort of an agreement on the major issues. But nevertheless, it is a good sign that these two leaders are coming together to talk about real issues, everything, like we said, from the economy to national security.
VOA business reporter Alexis Christophorus in New York. Coming up, a big reason to look up at the sky next week. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Some 40% of the world's population suffers from allergy, an overreaction of the immune system to a foreign substance. Coughing, sneezing, itchy eyes, or a runny nose are common symptoms of an allergy such as hay fever. But help may be as close as your own two fingers. Researchers have been looking at the therapeutic effects of acupuncture and acupressure.
Stimulating these various acupuncture points help to promote an antihistamine effect.
Cleveland Clinic acupuncturist Jamie Starkey says that acupressure works for allergy relief, and she teaches people to gently press with their index fingers at the base of each nostril or above both eyebrows, holding for 3 minutes.
patients will oftentimes experience immediate relief.
Starkey says most people experience no side effects from acupressure, and it's generally considered very safe. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition, coming to you from Washington. In the wake of the Pope's visit to the United States, an unrelated spectacular celestial event will take place in the heavens. What's in store is a lunar eclipse at the same time as a supermoon when the full moon is closest to Earth. VOA's Roseanne Skirbel says look skyward Sunday, September 27th, or before sunrise Monday, September 28th, depending on where you live.
In a lunar eclipse, the moon passes into the shadow of the Earth. This one is special. The full moon appears brighter and bigger because it's closer to Earth than any other time in its orbit.
So we'll go from being very bright to turning this beautiful red color, the effect of the sunrises and sunsets of the Earth being projected onto the lunar surface.
The last time the supermoon and lunar eclipse coincided was in 1982.
So it's these eclipses that give us a really, really unique opportunity to make specific measurements about the surface that we just can't do at any other time.
NASA has had its eye on the moon for a long time, beginning with the Apollo program in the 1960s. In more recent years, the space agency has collected data from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter that flies as low as 20 kilometers above the moon's surface.
We're seeing new impact craters that have formed in the 6 years that we've been there. We're seeing the evidence of migrating water across the surface. Not a lot of water, a small amount of water, but still the view that the moon was a static, unchanging place is now completely different.
Some moon rocks date back 4.5 billion years to the earliest history of our solar system.
When we look at the moon, we're really looking into the deep history of the Earth as well. And I think from that, we can learn a lot about how our planet has changed and how all planets have changed over time. So in order to understand what was happening just after the planets formed, studying the surface of the moon is one of the most interesting and best places to do that.
The supermoon eclipse will be visible Sunday after sunset in North America and all of South America, and before dawn on Monday in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Your next opportunity won't be until 2033. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Singer Nick Jonas is out with a new single called Levels. It comes off a CD set to be released early next year. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the song and Nick Jonas's career, which started at Disney with his older brothers Kevin and Joe.
They became famous on Disney, working with Demi Lovato. They appeared in the film Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2, and they were the it group until a difference of opinion led to their breakup, and then they went in separate directions. They're from Texas, and originally the group started to be the backup group for brother Joe Jonas, but it ended up being a very pop-oriented band. All the young girls fell in love with what they did. They were on tour with Miley Cyrus, and Nick was dating Miley for a little while. Then he went on to date Selena Gomez, so he's had quite a storied romance, shall we say, in the music business.
And this particular song is the first single off of the new album, is it not?
No, it's the third single.
Is this the third one?
The other two songs are Chains and Jealous.
Okay.
He hasn't released the album yet. He's kind of been tossing ideas about the album around, and he was also thinking about re-releasing his very first album, which, you know, he thought we'd rework some music. I was just watching an interview with him where he said he can't really define his sound. He just kind of knows that this is where he is today, and this is what he's created. And people asked him, what is your sound? He said, I don't know. I do what I do. And it's kind of a mixture of pop and, you know, dance and hip-hop, a little combination of everything.
Get on my elevator. Baby, we're going up. Give me that now and later. I can't get enough.
And speaking of dance, his brother Joe, who you said they used to be the backup group for, has got his own group, DNCE, which is really a dance-oriented group. That's their sound. They're more into club and electric dance music than Nick. Nick, this is more, it's almost like Justin Bieber's kind of flavor.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe him. I know that the sound that he's created for his latest album is doing very, very well, very popular. Nickelodeon gave him a Kids' Choice Award for Best Male Artist this year, and he's nominated for the MTV Award for Europe in Milan, Italy, coming up for the, it's the Best U.S. Act. So he's in the category of Best U.S. Act.
Wow. That's a pretty big category.
That's a big title.
That is, if he wins that one. And now, you mentioned that he is kind of going more towards a unique sound. He's defined his sound as kind of a mixture of R&B and a little bit of dance and a little bit of pop. So it's a little bit of everything.
Yes. And he does, a great job with what he does, and he seems to have the whole package. In fact, he is now doing a lot of acting stuff. He's on the Scream Queens new TV show. He's going to have a reoccurring role. He was seen on set with long hair and a beard when they were filming his episode this past week, as a matter of fact. He's also got another film, a big screen film coming out called Goat. He appears in that as well. So he's very busy with his acting as well as his music.
All right. Well, if you want to learn more about Nick Jonas, you can always ask Larry by sending a tweet to @VOAMusic. Or you can hit him up on Border Crossings, his Facebook page. And if you want to hear Border Crossings, you can tune into our webpage. That's voanews.com.
That'll do it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and features along with all kinds of video audio links on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Fundamedios, an Ecuadorian free speech group founded in 2006, may soon have to close its doors. The Ecuadorian government announced on September 8th its decision to initiate legal steps intended to dissolve Fundamedios. The United States, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby, is very concerned about the increasing restrictions on freedom of expression and freedom of association in Ecuador. Under President Rafael Correa, verbal and legal attacks against the media and civil society have intensified. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report, new regulatory bodies established under the law have issued a series of sanctions, fines, and forced corrections and retractions, primarily against independent media. Fundamedios, which started the year before Ecuador's current president Correa took office, defends journalists and news outlets that have been targeted by the government for lawsuits and fines. Fundamedios has also been highly critical of a restrictive new communications law that went into effect in 2013. Many rights groups, said spokesperson Kirby, have spoken out against the Ecuadorian government's latest action against Fundamedios. Human Rights Watch said in a statement, "The Correa administration wants to punish an organization for tweeting articles with news and opinions it doesn't like. This is an egregious abuse of power and a clear example of this government's authoritarian practices." The Committee to Protect Journalists said in a statement, "We urge Ecuadorian authorities to immediately withdraw this politically motivated procedure and allow Fundamedios to continue its work without any government interference. An active civil society and tolerance of dissenting views are vital components of any democracy. The U.S. shares international concern over the Ecuadorian government's efforts to silence critical voices and deny its citizens access to a diversity of information and ideas. The U.S. calls on the government of Ecuador to honor its commitments under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the American Convention on Human Rights by upholding freedom of expression and association as fundamental democratic rights."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.